This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a podcast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9.
Wait, I have an idea.
Hadouken!
We did it!
Our game's been saved, but it's dangerous to go alone.
Welcome to Checkpoint, your favourite video game show.
Yes, here waking up again. Another hour of Checkpoint. No Silver Fox today. So after our recent conversation, we are the Silver Docks. And it's definitely happening. Elliot's joined us here.
Yes, I'm here for the second hour.
You've come in.
I'm also here for the third and fourth hour. This is a long show, guys.
this is the day episode.
Second checkpoint, just like Hobbits want.
I like that, actually. Second checkpoint. Now, we were talking last hour about the Nintendo Switch. Had some messages in I want to read out as well, guys. Talking about the Nintendo Switch and the docking. Someone messaged in saying, so many docks.
Well, you can buy a second dock.
If you're tuning in right now, it's really weird context. I do apologise. Ron messaged in saying, I love docking my Switch. And Ron also... thanks, Ron. Ron also said that so far, no marks on the Switch from the docking. Could it be that those who say that docking has caused marks on their Switch is from mishandling?
Look, I'm just going to say, if you are worried about marking your Switch with docking, then you can always protect your Switch.
What I think is...
Safety first.
Yeah, safety first. Yeah. Always dock safely.
Yeah, dock safely. And if you are going to...
docking, though? They're always more vicious.
And if you are going to dock with others, then put a protective... put on protection.
I have to stop. Yeah. Checkpoint, It's a video game show. It's not a sex show. We're still in the early time slot of the day. Jacob needs like a cold drink of water.
Laughing so hard that my head hurts.
We have a lot to get through today on the show. So we've got more reviews coming at you, even with Rachel snorting. We've got Torment, Tides of Numenera. Am I saying it right?
That's close enough.
Numenera.
Yeah. Numenera.
Really cool.
You were looking forward to this. I remember you talking about this a while back.
Yeah, it's like lived up to what I thought it would be. So
and you'll find
I'm
out
really,
more about
really
that
happy.
Very shortly. Yeah. Also on the show today, Ghost Recon Wildlands review from myself, and also Archer's pre-prepared for us his review of Horizon Zero Dawn, just another small game that came out last week.
Some little
for
game.
For the PlayStation. Yeah. It's a tiny little release. Lots of stuff to talk about. Also on the show today, talking about open world gaming. Such an important part of gaming nowadays. It feels like every game is open world. So
but are they?
But are they?
Are they really?
Are they really?
And are they any good? And should they be open world? Is it a gimmick or is it something that games should be aspiring to be? So talking about that later in the show. But Elliot, apart from Torment, which you're going to review for us shortly, what else have you been playing at the moment? What are you playing right now?
Torment's taken up most of my time, but I've jumped into Gwent as well, into
Open
beta.
Yes!
And that's been a good experience. It's
How good
different
is Gwent?
From the Witcher 3 card game, which is kind of what threw me at first, because I had all my tactics ready to go.
Yeah.
Like, bust out the spies, get those medics going to bring back old cards, and they've totally rechanged it, which is good because they had to, because it was really imbalanced, and it just wouldn't work for player versus player. Like, it was good for player versus environment.
Yeah. And now, just for those playing at home, so Gwent was a optional side quest card game in The Witcher 3, in The Witcher franchise, and it was very popular. So popular, in fact, they've now gone and made a standalone digital card game version of Gwent, which is currently in the beta testing phase.
Yeah.
On consoles, Xbox and PC.
Yes.
So I'm playing on Xbox myself.
Oh,
I have
nice.
Been for a couple of months.
Okay.
I really like it. Yeah.
It's so fun, isn't it?
It's so fun. We should play together.
Yes.
That's amazing. But yeah, you find the changes threw you a little bit.
It threw me for sure because like when I was like when I played The Witcher 3, Gwent was how I played that game. Like there was a mod where you could replace all combat with Gwent battles.
Oh, and you used that mod?
Yeah. I mean, not for the entirety
That's
of
great.
The game, but like I was like, yes, I need to try this because hunting down cards and stuff, it was just so much fun. And there was a lot of cards that were just straight up upgrades of old cards, which felt good in The Witcher 3 because you were progressing. But it's not so good in a PvP environment where there's like this card's just better than this card. Like,
yeah,
what's the point in the old cards then in that system?
Sure.
So it is a different game, but there's a lot more depth to it now. There's a lot more depth to it now, and I was a bit worried at first. But after playing it for a bit longer, I'm really like looking forward to getting into it more.
Yeah, because part of the appeal of Gwent in The Witcher was that you'd have a conversation with somebody, and then the option would appear like challenge them to Gwent, and you're like, oh, so hey, you have Gwent cards, and they'd be like, oh, I love playing Gwent, and all of a sudden you're battling in cards.
There was like quests in The Witcher 3 that was like a Gwent competition, and
you had to go like fetch some Gwent cards for a guy.
Like they really made it really built into the universe really well. Whilst, you know, having the card game by itself, it's going to be a bit of a different vibe, obviously.
Yeah, it's a whole different beast. So we'll see how that ends up turning up.
Yeah,
like after release, but right now it looks promising.
I'm still
like
excited.
It.
I really like it. Yeah,
I love how they're making like you've got command cards now, like, and they're actually properly command cards.
What's
outside
command
of
card?
Like the the commander's horn from the original?
Yeah.
Like
this we could
Gwent.
Like this is too much to go like, into, but yeah.
Jacob looks unimpressed.
No, I'm just thinking nerds.
He's like, what is
I can't
going
talk because I play card games in real life. So
you know. Oh, you're the worst kind of nerd. There, cool. So much to get through on the show today. We are going to kick it off, Elliot, with your review.
Okay.
It's coming up right now. Torment: Tides of Numenera here on Checkpoint.
Torment: Tides of Numenera is a game whose lineage is solidly rooted in RPGs of the past. In fact, the game is a direct successor to 1999's classic Planescape Torment. Created by InXile, Tides of Numenera manages to create a profoundly detailed and intricate RPG experience for the player. With narrative and dialogue written as fluently and as elegantly as a novel, Tides of Numenera is an incredibly refreshing and sophisticated example of the video game medium. Yet having said that, it isn't a game I could recommend to every gamer, but I'll explain why a little bit later. The game has you playing as the last cast-off. You are the byproduct of an insane being called the Changing God, who is attempting to achieve immortality by creating and inhabiting one body after another. When the changing god leaves his latest body, your consciousness fills the void that it left behind. You then fall to Earth as a confused yet powerful entity, and you soon learn of a much feared creature called the Sorrow, who hunts the changing god and by association now hunts you. What Torment Tides of Numenera offers above all else is an intriguing narrative and a world absolutely brimming with lore, packaged together with some of the best writing I have seen in a video game. Although, here's where my warning comes in. Whilst the game is written fantastically, reading may genuinely take around 60 to 70% of your total play experience. Don't get me wrong, this isn't a knock against the game, it achieved exactly what it set out to do, but I just know there are people out there who will suffer from dialogue fatigue. Tides of Numenera is crafted to be the perfect game for that D&D player who is cunning or persuasive enough to avoid every combat encounter they can, because the game can be played in its entirety without issuing a single attack. In fact, Numenera does a fantastic job of being viably played in multiple ways, with multiple solutions existing for any given quest. Whilst combat can be avoided, I actively sought it out, because some of the best moments of that game came from what is called a crisis situation. Whilst combat only exists within a crisis, crises can often be dealt with via non-combat means as well. A couple of moments in particular stood out, where I had to make decisions during a crisis and split my party to achieve multiple tasks at once. It was genuinely thrilling and tense. If I was to criticize Tides of Numenera, I would point out that it didn't utilize the video game medium as well as I thought it could. There was moments in Numenera that played more like a choose-your-own-adventure book than a video game. As an example, there would be times where the game would describe a sound rather than play it, it would paint a word picture rather than show an image, and it would even describe an entire set of actions, decisions, and consequences rather than have the player play them out. Numenera is a fantastic but a niche game. I didn't expect it to grow on me as much as it did, but once I got over the narrative density of the early game, I got really immersed. Fans of Planescape or other old-school RPGs may well have just found their newest love.
So interesting to have a game that's pretty much can be entirely dialogue nowadays.
That's what it used to be, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, back in the day, those really old-school, like, just text adventure games is what they were called, because that's what the technology allowed, and yet there is fans of that kind of stuff that, like Tides of Numenera is trying to revisit. In a sense,
it's kind of like playing a good book, isn't it?
Well, it sounds like that was the origins of the graphic novel. Seriously, yeah. Like graphic novel games could fall off as a very similar pattern as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah.
I remember there was one when I was in primary school, and like all the computers were Apples, like Macs.
Yeah, yep.
And we'd load it up after we'd done whatever schoolwork we were supposed to do, and it was like go left. And, like, the whole adventure was, like, this pixelated green screen. And you just, like, go left, go to the manor, go right, attack.
Well, I've been thinking about games like Carmen Sandiego and stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
That was the best.
Where there's such a focus on, like kind of talking to people and figuring things out without having to have, like, a fight or a battle or a combat, you know? And, I mean, the option's in there, obviously, in Torment. But it sounds like it's definitely
a
narrative focus.
And you're not typing to, like, move forward. You are actually, like, there is gameplay in it, definitely. But... yeah, so much dialogue, so much reading.
Awesome. Well, if it sounds like your cup of tea, make sure you check it out. Torment Tides of Numenera is available now on PC, Xbox, and PlayStation 4. You're here on Checkpoint on Joy 94.9.
Hey, listen!
Want to keep up to date with the latest gaming news, reviews, previews, and more? Check out our website, checkpointgaming.net. That's checkpointgaming.net. Achievement unlocked.
Big reviews coming at you. Archer has got his review of Horizon Zero Dawn. Before that, it's my turn again. I've got a review for you guys. It came out this week. Ghost Recon Wildlands. Ubisoft has invested heavily in open-world sandbox-style gaming for a while now, so it was only a matter of time before it infiltrated one of the larger brands associated with them, Ghost Recon. After finding great success with another co-op-based shooter last year in The Division, they've doubled down on this concept with Wildlands, setting you free in the giant landscape of this Bolivia. It's one of the largest scale games I've played in terms of map size, and while it's predictable and flawed on occasion, it has, so far, kept me coming back to play with my mates on a nightly basis. While the story is largely forgettable despite the well-made cutscenes and constant flow of intel that you uncover about the drug cartel, before you know it, you'll be diving into old habits of uncovering new sections of the map, picking off enemies, grabbing upgrades, and moving on to the next objective. It's a rhythm that feels natural and expected, which makes it both very comfortable, but also somewhat repetitive if playing alone. In the single player, you'll have three AI-controlled squadmates who follow you around and assist you on your missions. But Ghost Recon Wildlands has been designed with online cooperative play in mind, and this is where the experience shines. Drop-in, drop-out cooperative play is done seamlessly here, allowing you to tear up the Wildlands with three friends. While your AI teammates always do what's predictable, playing with fellow humans often comes with varied, humorous results, giving objectives that you encounter multiple times throughout the course of the campaign new life. Coordinating a tactical assault in a stealthy manner feels smooth as butter when you pull it off successfully, with some genuinely intense moments that saw us tracking enemy positions with drones and binoculars, picking off snipers, moving in quietly to gather intel, and then escaping the area without leaving a trace. The flip side of this is when things don't go to plan. Having to quickly communicate and improvise to complete your objective is equally as intense. What starts off as a slow tactical plan becomes a matter of getting the job done by any means necessary, which creates some quality action movie moments with attacks coming from all directions, rebels fighting alongside you, backup for your enemies approaching your flank, mortars falling from the sky, and hopefully a true sense of overcoming insurmountable odds as a team. The world itself is gorgeous, with detailed environments that are varied as you discover more of them. Ghost Recon Wildlands as a sandbox title relies partially on the atmosphere of Bolivia to keep you engaged, so it's good that everything looks so nice. Weather effects are really damn pretty, with lightning cracking in the sky, rain bouncing off of the road, and the very slick water and lighting effects backing this up. Looking to distant mountaintops and dense forestry that you can travel to with the game's mix of land, air, and sea vehicles is a sight to behold. The actual handling of these vehicles does leave a lot to be desired, however. It feels janky for the most part, and while they work, the actual physics are almost comical at times. For example, cars shouldn't be able to scale mountains, but sometimes with enough persistence, you sort of can. Helicopters and planes definitely take some getting used to as well, but when available, I much prefer to fast travel my way close to my objectives rather than driving there on a long trip. Annoyingly, when you respawn, it's about a 50-50 chance that you'll spawn on your teammates. Half the time, I found myself appearing over 1 kilometer away on the map, having to then slowly schlep it on foot to get back to where my squad was, with no vehicles or fast travel options available nearby. When the developers have made such an effort to craft this vast and detailed landscape, the odd comical glitch can certainly be forgiven. I also liked finding different weapon parts I could customize my guns with, and enjoyed the satisfying loop of tagging supplies that led to upgrading my skill tree, though most of the game can be completed without putting much time into this if you weren't super invested. Ghost Recon Wildlands sticks closely to what works in sandbox games of this type, and does so with a very seamless cooperative experience. I wouldn't recommend playing this one solo, although there's nothing inherently wrong with this. The experiences that you'll share with your friends are far and away the most creative and exciting elements you'll come across. So much so that we've incorporated it into our nightly gaming ritual, which it slots into comfortably. Wildlands won't change the industry, but then it's not trying to. It's trying to be a solid, entertaining, and well-produced open-world shooter that you can play with your mates, at which it thrivingly succeeds. And it's available right now. It came out on Tuesday. So if you like your open world Ubisoft style games, check out Ghost Recon Wildlands.
Such a fresh review. From Tuesday to now.
You've done. I know. Yeah, well, I did play it, but before that, luckily, and I've been smashing it over the last week. And it is a lot of fun. Like, it's the stuff that goes wrong is kind of where it's the most fun, actually, because then chaos reigns and you're all screaming at each other through the headset trying to figure stuff out on the fly, and it becomes ridiculous.
Kind of wacky races fun?
A little bit, yeah. A little bit, yeah. So it is really cool. If you're keen on that sort of stuff, make sure you check it out, you guys. Here on Checkpoint on Joy 94.9.
Want to keep up to date with the latest gaming news, reviews, previews, and more? Check out our website, checkpointgaming.net. That's checkpointgaming.net. Achievement unlocked.
Yes, here on Checkpoint on Joy 94.9. Head to checkpointgaming.net for all the full reviews of the games we reviewed on the show today. There's a lot more content, trailers, pictures, all the works on the website. So checkpointgaming.net. Now into our topic, open world games. Now, open world gaming, for those who don't know what an open world game is, essentially, you might have like an intro tutorial, but then the game opens up and literally, in most cases, you can do whatever you want. So it's there might be missions everywhere on the map and you'll kind of select where you want to go and do what you want to do.
It's where you start playing the game, you're thinking, what am I going to do today? Like, because there is so much that you can do.
Yeah. So oftentimes RPGs use it because you can go and do all sorts of quests. There's usually a main quest line or main mission line kind of coursing through the game. However, there'll be side missions and side quests and fetch sub-quests. Sub quests. Yeah. There'll be things you can do that are a bit sort of different from what the main game might be. For example, in Final Fantasy 15, you might have a mission where you race chocobos, which are like horse type. Bird type.
What?
They're a horse type.
You ride like a horse.
When are they ever? At
nah.
what point?
Because you ride like a horse.
Emu.
They're giant.
You can ride
chicken.
Emus.
Okay. In you know what? In like 90% of games, you ride a horse. Okay, that's what
Sorry,
I'm talking
did
about.
Did somebody say you could ride emus?
Yes, you can ride
that's
emus.
You can totally ride emus.
You can totally
like actual emus.
Yes, you can ride emus and ostriches.
They have that kind of support structure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can they in real life?
You can do ostrich races.
I don't trust them, but. I don't have enough information to dispute it.
I wouldn't trust an emu, but you can do ostrich races.
We've strayed very far off the path already.
but it's not as bad as horses. That was way off the
no,
path.
No, it's not as bad as trying to compare horses to chocobos.
I'm trying to put it in perspective because not everyone knows what chocobos are in Final Fantasy, and I'm saying it's a mount. You ride it like a horse, don't you, Jacob? Correct?
No.
Yes, correct. Thank you.
You also fly on them occasionally.
Oh, my God. So, in open world games, you get to do whatever you want at any point you want, essentially. So, in some games, you have to unlock certain areas. So, Ubisoft are a publisher who has really believed in open world games.
Oh, they like their open world games, don't they?
Love it.
Did you hear the announcement? Just Dance 2018 is open world now? Not really.
Wouldn't that be great, though? I was like, you dance off in the street.
On your face, yeah. It was like, is it?
It could be. It's one of the only franchises they have that's not open world. But essentially, I mean, Assassin's Creed, that was one of the big ones for them that sort of started it all. You've got Watch Dogs as a franchise, which is open world hacking. You've got The Crew, which was open world driving. Yeah.
Far Cry,
open world shooting and skinning animals. You've got The Division. You've got Ghost Recon now. Open world games for Ubisoft in particular are quite a big deal for them. They think it's a fantastic game mechanic, obviously. And I guess people would probably agree because, I mean, commercially, these games have all done very, very well to the point where games often talk about how open their world is and how you can do anything. So I'm thinking about, like, Skyrim, for example.
Yep.
Elder Scrolls, which started back with Morrowind, Oblivion, all those. And an open world game like that where you come out of the cave and essentially go, do what you want. You
be
can
free, my children.
Yeah. You can become a mage. You can become an assassin. You can go and hunt dragons. You can, you know.
You can get bitten by a vampire, turn into a vampire, and have to avoid towns and avoid sunlight.
Or become a werewolf.
That was a good
unless you turn the sun dark.
Yeah. Ooh. But don't kick a chicken because, you know, the guards will kick
a chicken.
Yeah, don't kick the chickens.
They have many, many friends.
There's a lot of laws against that. Yeah.
What? The thing is, though, with open world games is that you really do have a choice of what to do, and you're not really, generally speaking, you're not super limited in what you can do. So, I mean, you could end up playing the game for literally tens of hours, 100 hours.
And not do the main storyline.
Or you could pick up like 1,000 subquests and then go, oh, crap.
Oh, I hate having too many quests to do. Pat makes me really anxious.
Because
as long as it doesn't have a HUD that crowds up on you, that's fine.
Feel obligated to finish these subquests as well.
Yeah.
Like,
so to compare it though, a more linear game experience, something like, you know, stuff that Naughty Dog does with like Uncharted and The Last of Us and stuff like that.
They're almost they open up to very small sections of games in the combat areas.
Gears of War as well is another one. The Call of Duty campaigns.
Like Jack and Daxter,
platformers. Yeah, so these are games where you'll complete a mission or a quest, as well, and you're led through the story. You don't really have, you might have a choice of how you complete a mission maybe, but essentially everyone's going to play the game in the same order and do things in that path.
The levels are quite open and expansive.
Well, it can be.
But the content is not so much.
Yeah, but you're still contained within that level.
You're going to trigger certain story beats. You're going to trigger certain cutscenes at the same time.
No matter
time.
How far you go, you will trigger this point if you step too far.
And at the end of the day, you're going to have this, I'm going to play it and Rachel's going to play it, and we're going to have pretty much the same experience, right?
Exactly.
Open world, however, I think what makes it so successful, one of the reasons is it has that real kind of water cooler conversation effect where I'll play a game for hours and so will
you. Luke, I've been playing this. I've done X, Y, Z. What have you been doing?
Yeah, exactly.
I've totally never had that experience. How did you do that? Oh, my God.
And you'll stumble across things that no one's found yet. I've done that with Zelda over the last week. Where,
I've totally been doing with Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah, you'll see things and go, oh, have you checked this out? And you'll be like, no, where was that? Oh, right near the starting area, there's this little path you can go down and you dig into the ground and you find this
thing. That's classic with Bethesda games as well, Fallout and the Elder Scrolls series.
Always with BioWare
There's always
as well.
Things you don't find.
Yeah, the hidden treasure maps in Skyrim were just insane to find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that they really, and they inspire multiple playthroughs and they inspire changing things and going back and backtracking and exploring things you've already been to, which the more linear games don't really allow for that. So I think that open world games, they really do just give you that extra sense of adventure and exploration, and that's why they've been so popular.
And I think a big part of it too is value for money. Those games you can put a lot of hours into, and like we play a lot of games and maybe that value for money isn't as noticeable, but for somebody who's buying and playing like one game every two or
who
three
has to
months,
be conscious of where they spend their money,
and they to have this one big experience they can like do for a month or two, that's so much better than having one short 10-hour game.
I know for a fact that I'll be playing Horizon Zero Dawn for months.
Yeah. And, I mean, a game like Zelda, you know, I've already put a lot of time into it. I'll put a lot more into it. But a game like Gears of War, which I love, literally the campaign can be done in 6 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not a multiplayer person, the value for the same price, you get one game for 6 hours, which is really tight and really, you know, good. Yeah, sure. But then you're getting a game that you can play for 100 hours or more. I mean, it doesn't compare in terms of value.
I mean, you look at the fact that you've got Dragon Age and Mass Effect, and they're quite old games, and even the the ones like Mass Effect, the original, Mass Effect 2, and the original Dragon Age, I still play them because they're so good. And they are so old now.
And you're probably still finding more things about them that you never even knew.
Yeah, there's still things I still find occasionally. And I mean, I'll even go back to Knights of the Old Republic, and that's an original Xbox game.
Mm. And that is a very smart game
design.
And
isn't it funny how even when you go back to play these games, you remember core components? You might change the experience somewhat, but there are certain things that you'll do over and over again because it enriched your experience the first time.
Yeah. We're going to talk more about open world games in just a moment. We've got one more review today coming up next. It's Horizon Zero Dawn, which Jacob's loving, and Archer's done the review for us today. And then we're going to talk about, are open world games overdone, or should all games head towards being open world? Here on Checkpoint on Joy 94.9.
Hey, listen!
Want to keep up to date with the latest gaming news, reviews, previews, and more? Check out our website, checkpointgaming.net. That's checkpointgaming.net. Achievement unlocked.
Here on Checkpoint on Joy 94.9, we are talking about open world games here on the show today. Before we do that, though, one more big review of an open world game that came out last week. Arguably one of PlayStation 4's biggest releases. It's Archer's review of Horizon Zero Dawn.
Not for a long time has a game managed to draw me into a world and the lore in the same way as Horizon Zero Dawn. Guerrilla's perfect execution, attention to detail, and imagination shines through in every aspect of this stunning title. From the attention to visual detail, to the deep lore and flowing controls in combat, Horizon Zero Dawn is a defining game of 2017, which is made all the more impressive by its original origin as a brand new IP. Horizon Zero Dawn follows the life of Aloy, a young outcast of the Nora tribe in a fantasy stone-era world filled with incredible robotic beasts who roam the lands alongside organic animals. From the get-go, the title starts introducing hints of a wider narrative, clues and small revelations about the world that existed before and has now been lost to time. Following Aloy from a very young age alongside her mentor, Rost, the player is guided into the world and taught the rules, introduced to the combat and interactions. Without wanting to spoil anything about the narrative, because in case it wasn't apparent, I highly recommend Horizon Zero Dawn. The game offers quite a unique approach to the sociological constructs it presents, with themes of matriarchy and motherhood running deep through every facet of the world. Such stories are often left untouched by games for the most part. If you're a fan of deep and original worlds with fine-tuned and perfected stories, this is not a game to miss. Whilst you are not able to create your own character and immerse you in the world in the way a lot of RPG fans love, the characterization is top tier. Allowing for a blank slate character in Horizon Zero Dawn may have even done the narrative a massive disservice. You'll quickly fall in love with Aloy and empathize with her struggles as she discovers an amazing world and fights for answers. Horizon Zero Dawn offers a variety of different combat methods, allowing the player to go at it stealthy, get up and close and brawly, or hang back and go rangy. The game encourages, however, to blend the play styles and use multiple different attack methods depending on the challenge in front of you. While I'm not typically a stealth kind of guy, the way Guerrilla has implemented into the combat here is exactly how I want it. Areas that you can stealth are very easy to identify and find, and whether or not you're visible or audible to enemies is very clearly communicated, making it fun and seamlessly blended into the rest of the combat. The ranged combat is also some of the best I've experienced, and with the addition of traps and other tools to keep yourself out of harm's way, skills with the bow are essential for a fun playthrough. I highly recommend picking up the concentration skill as soon as possible, however. It is invaluable when dealing damage to those critical weak points on enemies while keeping the flow up. But what wilderness survival-ish title would be complete without a crafting mechanic? Now, crafting systems are usually a major point of frustration for myself, but here it feels super easy to navigate and not at all invasive. There aren't 10 bajillion different resources that need to be collected, and the ones that you do need have straightforward names, making it easy to keep track of what you need and where to find it. Resource gathering itself is lovely and simple, plenty of things around that you need and easy ways to collect them as you're traveling. It's exactly what it needs to be and doesn't end up frustrating the player by becoming a nuisance. If I had to nitpick something, however, I would take issue with some of the boss fights. For the first time in a while, I went out of my way to do some of the side dungeons, half because I wanted some more experience before pushing forward, and half because I really wanted to find out more about the world of Horizon Zero Dawn. They're actually quite fun and incredible to explore, but when I end up having to resort to online guides to help me get past a boss fight, I take this as a failing of the game and not myself. I feel Horizon let me down on some occasions, failing to adequately teach me what I was supposed to do in some encounters, leaving me just to die over and over again, building up frustration and resentment. But this is a relatively minor complaint. For the most part, I found the game does an excellent job at tutorializing skills and abilities. In an age where so many titles are vying for the player's attention, allowing them to leave in frustration is simply not an option. Horizon Zero Dawn is one of my favourite games of recent times. In fact, it's probably up there as one of my favourite games, period. Not since Tomb Raider 2013 has an action-adventure title engaged, surprised, excited, and thrilled me like Horizon Zero Dawn has. The narrative is engaging and beautiful. The characters are interesting, relatable, and endearing, and the gameplay as a whole is exactly what I want. If you're a fan of the genre, this is not one to miss out on. And if you're a fan of giant robotic dinosaurs, and let's face it, who isn't? Horizon Zero Dawn is a game you should have started playing yesterday.
Thank you very much, Archer, for that one. I've played Horizon a bit myself.
And I'm in love with this game.
It's pretty cool.
I am so in love with this game. At the moment, the biggest thing for me is trying to find a fire bellow back heart.
I know what that is. So, talking about open world games, which Horizon is another open world game, and how popular they are, do we think that it's a trend that is maybe overdone?
No.
Are we sick of them?
No,
not quite.
I think they're on par. Like, they're
I think
they're
a really even mix.
Yeah.
I'm going to Elliot, who doesn't think so.
No, I don't think there's too many open world games. I'm worried that they're becoming the same as each other rather than people being inventive and trying different things within open world games. They tend to be pretty formulaic.
What do you want in them, a chorus line?
Well, I think what we're talking about is, like, open world games, essentially you'll go to an area and you'll find a thing in that area that then shows you the rest of the area. And once you do that, you do the quests in that area and then you complete those quests and that opens up the next area. And I think that they do, and then Ubisoft games have this problem, and I think that all games, open world games, tend to kind of do this. Maybe not so much Bethesda stuff, but they still kind of... they have that formula where you
Bethesda's got their own formula. And I almost feel like open world developers, they borrow off each other so much. It feels like more than like linear games. So even games like Horizon like has these noticeable comparisons to some Ubisoft titles. And then like The Legend of Zelda, they said that they literally played The Witcher 3 as inspiration. And it's like,
you can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're talking about. Like, when every game's like, oh, well, it's open world, especially franchises that weren't open world, and then saying, oh, the next one's going to be open world.
Just like Batman. Like so Batman. I will say, for instance, that the very first Batman was my favourite by far, and then they went open world, and it lost a little bit of what made it special.
Yeah.
Because I like that kind of returning to areas once you have the unlock and you can progress.
To go back and do extra things in different areas.
Yeah, and that structure was better in storytelling. I think having that structure of linearity makes it better.
Do you think it's like a core component system, though? Because I'm assuming you're talking about, like, say, for instance, Assassin's Creed, where you have the viewing platforms that reveal points on a map, yeah? So, like, Horizon Zero Dawn has the tall necks that you scaled, but it doesn't just give you geographical information, it gives you a whole lot of extra information as well, and there are areas that it doesn't actually show up that have icons on the map that you have to go and do additional things that do, like, my favorite thing about this game is the fact that you can override the machines to fight for you.
Yeah, but I mean, that's still within the main formula of open world games, though, you know.
Yes.
I think, you know, it's always become a genre in and of itself. Open world gaming is a genre now, and I think that many games do fall into the same habits. I mean, even in Zelda, you climb to a tower and you use your Sheikah Slate to get access to
mark
the map.
Them.
Yeah.
And then you can fast travel to that point. I mean, they're all borrowing very heavily from each other now. And I think that even like with Ghost Recon Wildlands that I reviewed today, Ghost Recon was never open world. Ghost Recon was always a tactical third-person shooter with missions. This is open world. It works. Is it a Ghost Recon game still?
I think the problem is that there's going to be some people who love Ghost Recon and are like, well, this isn't really the game I wanted. Like, I can play what Wildlands is offering, I can play in Far Cry, but I don't have a Ghost Recon anymore.
Because if they said we're doing an open world Gears of War, I'd be like, no, don't. Don't do that. Because it's all about the set pieces.
Similar to within RPG settings, like Fire Emblem is always linear.
Right.
It's not open world.
That's great.
If it became open world, it would lose its magic.
Oh, exactly. But then again, other games have done it really well, like Xenoblade Chronicles.
Yes.
That started off, Xenogears was a very linear RPG, and now it's this open world ridiculous game with so much to do, and it's really fantastic.
And Final Fantasy
it can
did
work.
It well.
You're
Final
right.
15 did it very well.
Yep. So I think that it's a trend that I think that publishers and developers should be very careful with. They shouldn't just do it because it's open world and it sounds good on the back of a box.
Mm.
They should do it because it really genuinely works within the universe of that game. And that's where it becomes important. And that's my issue with it, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Where
on that,
the issue is when it becomes a detriment to the game.
Yeah, something to put on the review or something, you know.
Because they're doing it because it's so hip right now.
Yeah, or it's like a trailer, like the new open world experience. And you're like, yeah, but what?
Like, yeah, they say it's like six times the size of the last map. And it's like, but how much stuff is in that?
Look
like, if it's just open land and it's boring.
Oh, this map is 10 times bigger than Skyrim's map. And you're like, who cares? That map was too big. Like, I don't want that. I don't want more.
Just calm down.
Just relax.
And then you get the whole procedural generation thing going, and it's like, that's not even real things.
10 times.
Go away, No
chickens.
Man's Sky.
No Man's Sky. I love that somehow No Man's Sky still copped it from you today. It's been out for like, what, 9 months, and you're like, No Man's Sky.
You always have to bring it back. They're adding multiplayer now.
Adding the ship stuff and bits and pieces too.
What stuff?
Didn't it get a patch?
Oh, yeah.
I got a patch.
Yeah, the ship.
Yeah, you got a ship. And now they're adding multiplayer.
Finally.
But is it just
too
late?
Why didn't it launch with multiplayer? That's dumb.
Yeah.
See, they should have
don't ask
left
questions
it.
You don't want to know the answer to. That is a can
of
worms.
We just want to know who signed off on the paperwork so we can go and speak to them directly.
Yeah, I don't understand. Look, guys, that's pretty much all the time we have for today. Open world games, I think, you know, there's a great place for them. Some of them are fantastic. Other ones should be left alone.
But please don't make everything open world.
Not everything.
We like our platformers.
Not
everything. Yeah.
We like our set destinations.
We like our shooters the way that they should be.
Exactly.
Progressive levels that we can unlock things.
Yes, you can replay those missions with friends easily.
Yeah.
As a single mission. Yes.
In times, you know, you don't, because you want to be able to play a mission at a time. You don't want to have to go into an open world and go, oh, sorry guys, I have to leave. I only had 20 minutes.
Rachel, thank you so much.
Always.
Jacob, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Elliot.
Thanks.
Thank you. You sound so, thanks.
Yeah, whatever.
We are going to end with some Ghost Recon Wildlands soundtrack. This has been Checkpoint on Joy 94.9.
make sure you subscribe to our podcast to hear all our past episodes. Checkpoint on Joy 94.9, and we'll catch you at the next checkpoint.
This has been a Joycast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9. If you like this podcast, please rate us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.